Whitmarsh of Marsh and McLennan Insurance, and if you would, perhaps maybe you could come forward and just refer to it so we wouldn't have to, because all of the members have a copy of your testimony. I'm sorry that the time has gone by so quickly, but I did want the people around the state to have a chance, so we could go ahead. I believe we're off the teleconference now.
This is the moderator, and as you know, and the chairperson has expressed a desire to terminate the teleconference portion. Thank you for your participation.
My name is Bob Whitmarsh, Marsh and McLennan in Anchorage. And briefly, I would just like to point out to make certain that you are looking to the full extent of what this bill would do from an insurance standpoint. Not only would it eliminate an already drastic position on the liquor liability market, but it would also eliminate the premises liability, which means that a bar or restaurant would not be able to buy any liability insurance, even for a simple slip and fall. To carry that a couple steps further, we did a little study with a number of our in-house clients, being one of the largest brokers for that class of business in the state. And it was determined that roughly 60 to 65% of the establishments were leased, and every single lease that we reviewed required that they carry at least premises liability. If they do not carry it, they're in default of their lease. We also talked to two banks in Anchorage, and they are now requiring premises liability to any building loan. So if they cannot purchase the insurance, they cannot build new buildings, they cannot, if they default in their leases, cannot stay in their current positions. Therefore, you would could have the effect of closing a great number of businesses. Beyond the written testimony, I would like to make one other point, and that is there's been a lot of comments on the visibly intoxicated and who's responsible and whatnot. And one thing that I would like to point out is that the highest percentage of suits, and these would probably be in the 90% area, are not filed until roughly 18 months to 2 years after the loss. It's very difficult for the owner to go back and figure out who was where on what day, and did they serve this individual one drink too many or 10 drinks too many. And it's unfair to that party when the plaintiff can go dig up their information immediately and have access to all the people who were present. If there is going to be a true dram shop act, there should be some provisions for protecting both parties and not just one side. The bar owner, in theory, should be innocent until proven guilty. And the way it currently stands, they are an extreme disadvantage when they go into the court. The final factor is that there's also been a lot of testimony about who is responsible for what. And I think that Alaska and all the other states have to quit looking at insurance, at resolving insurance, or the society's ills, and set up their own mechanisms and have insurance only as a means of getting to someplace and not the reason for doing it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your patience in waiting around. We have two more people who had signed up here in Juneau, Claudia Brenner from Anchorage and Jan Rentmore. Claudia, would you come forward, please?
My name is Claudia Bruner, and I work with the Alaska Council on Prevention of Alcohol and Drug Abuse. And I think I would just like to reiterate a few points that Mr. Coleman brought up. First of all, in speaking on behalf of the council, we are in support of the bill as it's been drafted, and we're especially pleased at the amendment, which outlines responsible business practices and includes such items as server training. You heard earlier from Dr. Coleman, or Mr. Coleman, and one of his colleagues, Dr. Jim Mosier, has done a lot of research in this area, and he states that approximately 25 states impose civil liability on commercial servers. He states through a study in 1984 that legislatures and courts in states without dram shop liability have determined that servers of alcoholic beverages have no duty to protect those that might be injured by their patrons or guests, and rather the fault is placed entirely on the drinker. States with dram shop liability have determined that servers do have a duty of care which coexists with the duty of the drinker. We believe that with the passage of this bill that the state of Alaska is saying to everyone that this is a shared responsibility. And the Alaska Council supports this bill in hopes of furthering the reduction of alcohol-related problems in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bruner. Jan Redmore, please. We're not on the teleconference.
Oh, okay. My name is Jan Redmore. In 1980, I renovated the historic Red Onion Saloon in Skagway and purchased a liquor license for it and have owned and managed the bar as a sole proprietor for 6 years. I have worked very hard and am very proud of my business. It has become a major tourist attraction in Skagway, employs up to 8 people, and other than one small grant, the revenues from the bar have totally supported the restoration of the building. Prior to moving to Skagway, I worked in the fields of health planning and public information. I'm very concerned about the problem of drunk driving, and I feel that my background gives me a broader perspective than just a business one. The problem of drunk driving is a serious one, and I commend this committee for addressing it. However, as with most problems that involve human behavior, it is a complex one which there are no simple solutions. My concern with House Bill 345 is that while well-intended, it will actually worsen the problem of drunk driving at the same time that it drives many small, independently owned businesses across the state out of business. In short, if I am to lose my business, I would at least like to see some good accomplished. Here are some of the statistics that I've heard that make me suspect that holding bars and bartenders liable for the actions of their customers is not addressing the real problem. Nationally, 2/3 of all fatal DWI accidents are caused by only 7% of drivers, primarily problem drinkers, alcoholics, and repeat offenders. In Alaska, in 1984, drivers under 21 were responsible for 20% of alcohol-related deaths. Because it is illegal to serve alcohol to individuals under 21, these drivers were most likely drinking at home or in their cars and not on licensed premises. Wholesale figures tend to indicate that 80% of the alcohol sold in Alaska is consumed off premises. There is a lack of information in this area, and since I am not a statistician, I do not pretend to have totally accurate interpretation of these statistics. However, they do tend to indicate that the problem lies with the drinker and not with the server. Until the attitudes of drinkers are changed, abuse and careless use of alcohol will continue. The average citizen must understand thoroughly throughout his or her consciousness that drinking and driving is illegal and intolerable. Bars share a responsibility with government to help affect this change in attitude, but as the above statistics indicate, they can only affect a small portion of the problem. Responsibility must ultimately lie with the individual. Making anyone else responsible for the drinker's behavior will only increase the problem. The issue of personal responsibility is more than a moral or philosophical one. Anyone who has worked in the field of alcohol rehabilitation knows that until the alcoholic takes responsibility for his or her problem, there is no improvement in their condition. The unending string of lawsuits that will follow if HB 345 is passed will drive most small bars out of business. The cost of a drink will be forced higher and higher. However, this will not prevent people from drinking. It will only encourage their getting together to drink in each other's homes, at private parties, and in their automobiles. This phenomenon was clearly demonstrated in Skagway in 1982 when the closure of the White Pass and Yukon Railroad forced over 50% of the working population into unemployment. Bar sales dropped drastically with a corresponding increase in private home parties. Small bars cannot afford the attorney fees to protect themselves. While the sound business practices mentioned in the bill are intended as some level of protection, they are too vague and attorneys will argue endlessly about whether or not the bartender should have known better. In fact, it is impossible to tell when someone has reached the point at which they cannot drive. Individual tolerances vary so greatly that short of a breathalyzer or blood test, there is no way that a bartender can tell when a person needs to be cut off. Only the individual himself knows how much he has had to drink and how he is feeling. Witnesses at the bar will have varying reports as to the actual condition of the individual and the circumstances, particularly after years have elapsed before the case goes to court. This will give attorneys ample opportunity to argue about fine points and contradictory testimony by witnesses. An example of the vagueness of the sound business practices is that it does not define specifically what is an adequate number of employees for a crowd of particular size. I suspect the attorneys could argue forever about this one. In 1984, I paid $6,000 for an insurance package, which included fire, premises liability, liquor liability, and workers' compensation. In December of that year, all of my insurance was canceled. In the spring of 85, I was informed that the cost of a similar package was $18,000. When I dropped my liquor liability, the remaining coverage still amounted to $12,000. At present, I have no liability coverage whatsoever. Talking to my insurance agent, I learned that of the bars they insure in Southeast, 90% have no liquor liability and 25% have no liability coverage at all. If this is the situation under existing standards of negligence, how can HB 345 but worsen the situation? In its present form, this bill encourages the Sue Happy deep pocket ethic, which the public is becoming increasingly disenchanted with. And with the bars uninsured, could not the state as the licensing agency become the ultimate deep pocket? And has not the state neglected its responsibilities to set safety standards and regulations for this industry? And Dr. Coleman referred to the fact that there should be a different standard for the industry than for a different standard of care for those who make profit off of this substance. But other professional licensed groups are have high standards that they must conform to by law. Doctors, pharmacists, lawyers are all examples of licensed professions in which there are educational requirements and tests and standards which must be met by the public. Even hairdressers must meet standards set by law before they can practice. Why are there no such standards for people licensed to dispense this potentially dangerous drug? When I was issued my liquor license in 1980, I received no training and was not even asked if I understood the effects of the drug I was being licensed to serve. When I searched Title IV for guidance, all I learned was that I was not to serve one, minors, and two, visibly intoxicated people, whatever that might mean. The liquor industry is and should be a regulated industry, and there should be clear and unambiguous safety standards legislated up front in statute and regulation. I hope that this committee will accept the challenge of doing this and not take the backdoor approach which HB 345 opts for by basically saying, let the courts decide. Only the attorneys will benefit from this approach, as was evidenced by the preponderance of enthusiastic testimony by attorneys at last summer's teleconference hearing in Anchorage. The following are my own ideas of steps that the committee could take to protect the public safety and the survival of small businesses such as mine at the same time. 1. Mandate training and licensing of licensees and their employees through law, not as HB 345 suggests, which leaves training optional and offers it only as a defense. 2. Set other specific standards by law. For instance, define in numbers what is a reasonable ratio of customers to employees and bars of varying sizes. 3. Get better information as to who is causing the alcohol-related accidents. Is it the social drinker in the bar or at home parties? Or is it the repeat offender, the chronic alcoholic who needs nothing short of long-term rehabilitation? Target this group and develop education programs aimed at them. Mandate a completion of court-ordered alcohol treatment for alcohol offenders. If you determine that the server is the problem and not the drinker, then make all servers liable under the same standard. While I believe strongly, as most Alaskans do, in personal responsibility, at least the social host provision, as it is called, will have the beneficial effect of emphasizing to drinkers and servers in all walks of life that drunk driving is everyone's problem. 6. Establish a subcommittee to identify other possible solutions to the problem. Thank you for sitting through this dissertation. This issue is one which I feel strongly about, not only because the survival of my business depends upon it, but because there are serious moral and public policy issues to be decided with regard to the safety of the public. I pledge my support and cooperation to this committee in attempting to find workable solutions to the problem. Thank you.
Representative Belcher.
Jan, excellent testimony from businesswoman. Certainly, it was probably one of the best that I've heard presented. You have no liability insurance?
No.
Suppose somebody sues you next week. What would you do?
Well, I'll give you an example of a situation that happened in my town. And I would like to say that from the day I opened the doors of my bar, I did everything that has been mentioned in the Sound Practices Act. And one of the problems with leaving it optional, you know, as a possible defense, is that when I cut someone off, they can go down the street and get a drink, because unless it's mandated in law, people have, you know, the quote-unquote good bars are penalized. But we did have a possible alcohol-related driving accident this fall in Skagway. 3 men drove off the White Pass dock. There were no witnesses. All 3 of them were last seen in my bar, presumably. They probably were drinking there's some evidence that they had bought packaged store liquor. Two of the three I never served. One was a violent drunk, and so I never served him. The other, we served one beer to, and he seemed kind of weird, and that was at 4 o'clock, and we cut him off. And the third gentleman was an older fellow, large fellow, a very quiet, easygoing mechanic, worked on the West Coast buses, had been around for years. He came in, and he had three or four drinks over a 3 or 4 hour period. At some point in the night, these gentlemen drove off the way past the dock and died. And the word swept around Skagway, you know, well, you sue the bars, and the Red Onion's the last bar. I mean, it was just like everybody was saying it. And so I had to hire an investigator to come up to Skagway and document my bartender's story. The fact that we never did serve the one gentleman, that the other fella was served one beer and cut off at 4 o'clock, and the third gentleman, we tried to get witnesses to say that he was not staggering or visibly intoxicated when he left the bar. But the fact of the matter is, if this goes to court, I will be named. So in addition to the $1,500 I've already spent on the investigator to protect myself, then I'm going to have to fight it through the courts. And I personally, at this point, could not afford a $20,000 legal fee, as the lady mentioned some other bar that had no fault. So that's my only scenario. I would lose my bar very quickly because I don't have large cash reserves. I only have 4 months of business, really, each year. I'd like to say that I never raised my prices. Once the railroad closed, our town hit very serious economic problems, and I never raised the price of a drink because I didn't feel that the locals could afford it. But this crisis this summer with my fire insurance going up so much was the first increase since the closure of the railroad.
Thank you. Thank you, Jan. We're a half hour over, and I thank you for your Betty, for your indulgence, and we will have this bill before us next week to decide what further action you wish to take. With that, the meeting is adjourned at 5 p.m.